All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
It must be nice to always believe you know better, to always think you're the smartest person in the room.
No, it's awful.
He's not wrong. Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Wednesday, January 25th, 2023. Coming up this hour, Jody Habish-Sinikin, the candidate for state senate in the 8th Senate District in the Milwaukee area. There will be a special election for that vacancy in the legislature in April. Also, State Treasurer Sarah Godlewski joins us with one of her regular visits to talk more about women serving in public spheres, whether it's public office or as community leaders or what have you. Before that, however, we will talk in our next segment with State Senator Brad Paff from La Crosse. We have been talking about Governor Evers' State of the State address last night. We've been talking about the Republican response to it. And so we're going to ask Senator Brad Paff about both of those things, about what he thought of the governor's remarks and what he thought of the standard Republican pablum that came out after the speech was over. Our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. You can call us, give us your ideas on the state of the state or other matters at 844-967-2789. That's the phone number for most all of the Civic Media radio shows. And then we've got our own special phone number up north if you'd rather dial a 715 number, 388-7155. Again, 715-388-7155. And you can follow what we do at Up North News, which is a separate entity from Civic Media, over at upnorthnewswi.com. There are so many areas that get talked about in a state of the state address, and so many things that a legislature can consider that, you know, help or hurt the state. And there's so many ways to interpret what has been said, but there is no other way to spin the state of the Wisconsin economy other than to say that it's in good shape right now. And it's in good shape right now because you have had a governor in office for the past 4 years, basically, you know, riding gain on whatever would be the worst fiscal instincts of legislative Republicans. And Governor Evers did not shy away from talking about those good things about the economy last night.
We've gotten to work these last 4 years making smart strategic investments, and our state's economy shows it. Over the last 4 years, unemployment has hit record lows, and we've had the highest number of people employed ever. Our state has a AAA bond credit rating for the first time in about 40 years. That means we're able to get lower interest rates and save your tax dollars. Our general fund and rainy day fund both ended the last fiscal year at the highest levels ever in our state's 175-year history.
So the funds have been coming in, not just federal pandemic aid, but the fact that small businesses are growing in Wisconsin, and the Evers administration has been helping small businesses through the Main Street Bounce Back grants. And so the governor reminded legislators that there's a right way to do things when it comes to, as he put it, smart strategic investments in small businesses. And there's a wrong way. And the wrong way is whenever you try cookie cutter, one size fits all things like, you know, a massive tax break from the very wealthy and hope that it all trickles down. And the governor called out the recklessness of a flat tax proposal.
Same time, just because we're in the greatest fiscal position in the state's history doesn't mean we can afford to be careless. Wisconsinites have to work too hard and have gone through too much for us to return to austerity. Now is the time to stay prudent, to stay safe, smart, and be bold with reasonable investments to keep building a lasting legacy of prosperity. So cutting taxes is part of our agenda, just as it has been for the last 4 years. We've kept more money in Wisconsinites' pockets and delivered the largest tax cut in state's history. And we can do more. But I also want to be clear tonight, splurging $3.5 billion to hand out to big breaks to the wealthiest 20% of earners isn't responsible. It's a bit reckless.
And then Evers went on for a proposal on how to address taxation and local support. And we're going to talk about that in the next segment with State Senator Brad Paff. But I wanted to wrap things up here is with something we mentioned last hour as well. And that is that when anybody gives a major address, any kind of a state of the state speech or what have you, you know, these are not easy things. And I say this as somebody who is perfectly comfortable standing in front of thousands of people and making remarks. But you're always aware that, you know, you're only one little misstep away from losing the point of your remarks, maybe losing your audience, or in the case of Governor Evers last night, maybe getting the audience more on your side for a bit as he was attempting to talk about small businesses and Fond du Lac when he references Fondy. And he talks about a place, he calls it Edith's. It's Edith's Bridal and Tuxedos. And he talks about that small business, but along the way has one little trip up of the tongue and gets a good laugh out of the crowd.
Some things haven't changed much over the years, like Edith's right downtown in Fondy, where Kathy bought her first wedding, or her wedding, not her first wedding dress. Her first and last wedding dress, I hope. Good Lord.
It took a minute to recover there, but you know, again, it was all in good fun. And you need moments like that because again, you have the robotic standing and applauding from the legislators who are on the side of, you know, the governor's party, the folks on the other side. Right now, Republicans sit there with their arms crossed. And so honestly, any bit of levity is going to help. We'll talk more about the proposals and the reaction with State Senator Brad Paff coming up. That and so much more here on Up North News Radio on a Wednesday. It's just, it's my own little wish for the Republican legislature that they would just stop talking and actually get some things done for Wisconsin. And some of those things were outlined last night by Governor Tony Evers in the State of the State address. There was a Republican response that, again, was a whole lot of talk in helping us break it all down. State Senator Brad Paff from La Crosse. Good to see you again. How are you,
Senator? Hey, thank you, Pat. It's great to be with you. And good morning, listeners.
Yeah, it's good to be here to talk a bit about the things that could be getting done for the state. Senator Paff, we thought maybe after the election that after the voters had spoken and said that in the non-gerrymandered districts that they would like some more moderation, they'd like some more cooperation. Republicans almost kind of sort of talked about that in the immediate aftermath of the election. And yet, after everything that the governor outlined, the first thing that Speaker Robin Voss said was, I assume most of these are dead on arrival. I assume you think that's not helpful.
Yeah, that's not helpful at all, Pat. I mean, what we heard from the governor last night was something that the voters of this state have been asking for. And that is, they've been talking about the needs to make sure that we continue to provide a tax relief for hardworking middle-class residents, clean water, addressing childcare deserts, making sure that our K-12 public schools from Wisconsin Rapids to Richland Center and everyone in between, you know, that it has the adequate dollars, workforce development issues. These are issues that are common sense, bipartisan issues that the voters of this district have spoken on over and over again. And the governor addressed that last night. And rather than actually having a conversation about how we can move forward on these topics, the Speaker of the Assembly stated that it's dead on arrival. What's dead on arrival? The request of the people of this state. I thought the governor's address last night was bold. He definitely moved the ball forward when it comes to providing revenue for our local units of government so we can have, you know, safe communities. He talked about tax reform for middle-class working adults here. But at the same time, you know, he's reaching out, providing an olive branch, and to have, you know, the leader in the assembly say that everything is dead on arrival, I don't quite know what's going on here. It's unfortunate.
And then he went on to add something on social media in response to the governor saying that 2023 should be the year of mental health, making the Get Kids Ahead program permanent, spending about $500 million to expand access to mental and behavioral health services, efforts to reduce suicides and other mental health related issues, $270 million of that directed toward expanding school-based mental health services to kids. And somebody reacted to it, and Voss reposted it with the words, quote, not going to happen. I mean, what does that say about Republicans thinking about the mental health issues that affect kids? And as you know, farmers, you and the Republicans have butted heads about exactly. mental health services there too. You're as well positioned as anybody to talk about the Republican position on caring for the state of mental health for their constituents.
And Pat, I just can't believe that such a response would come from the leader, for the simple reason is this. If you speak with law enforcement, they will tell you that the jails are full. And the thing is that we have to address mental health issues in this state. If you speak with Chamber of Commerce, they talk about the fact that they're trying to, their businesses are trying to find employees. And again, we have to address this mental health issue in this state. When it comes to K through 12 education, we recognize the fact that our children are hurting right now, and we need to make sure that we provide the kind of resources that are needed in order to make sure that you know, our children continue to grow and they can succeed. I just don't understand, you know, why you would push back on something like mental health. This is something that does not discriminate between rural or urban. It doesn't discriminate based upon gender. It doesn't discriminate based on economics. I mean, the thing is, mental health is impacting residents in this state, quite frankly, residents in this country. And, you know, the more that we can do in order to try and, you know, provide the assistance, that'll help as far as we going forward, educating our students, growing our economy, making sure that we got a workforce that is prepared move forward.
And going back to the law enforcement angle for a moment, again, what we're seeing is a continuation of what happened a couple of years ago after a rash of police violence, when there was talk about having more instances of mental health workers be able to try to ward off things that needed, you know, an armed response right. to them. And instead of providing more resources for mental health that way, folks were accused of trying to defund the police, completely right. perverting, you know, the notion of what needs to be done for mental health care out there. Let's see if I can find one area of bipartisan agreement. Maybe. The governor talked for a little while about clean water and about PFAS, about industrial chemicals that have been getting into the water. You know this very well from French Island in your area. Everybody has bottled water out there. You talked about spending $100 million to combat that pollution, increase testing, sampling, and monitoring statewide. We know that Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce and some legislators have blocked these efforts. Do you have any sense that Republicans are at least going to move off the dime somewhat in helping this effort to increase PFAS testing, sampling, monitoring, cleanup, and corporate accountability? I probably lost you on that last one.
Yeah, I hope so. I sincerely hope so, because like mental health, when it comes to clean water, it doesn't matter if you're in a rural or urban area. It doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat. You deserve and you need to drink water that is clean and clear from your tap. But we will see on that. We have opportunity here. The DNR board, we're going to have some new appointees in the Department of Natural Resources board. We'll see what we can do when it comes to making sure that the DNR can continue to move forward. As far as providing testing dollars, yes, I think that that can take place. Monitoring, I believe there can be additional resources there. Beyond that, we will see how far the Republican legislature wants to go.
You know, if nothing else, it could be a year to, you know, call Speaker Voss, call out his bluff, if that's what you want to call it, in that in 2019, 2020, well, this was pre-pandemic, and they talked about the year of clean water, and Speaker Voss, not wanting to be outdone by the governor, called for his own speaker's task force on clean water. They put together a good report, but then that legislature funded only a small percentage of the recommendations in that report. You would think, if nothing else, Democrats can continue to at least attempt to goad Republicans into saying, look, this is the speaker's own report. Let's put more resources into what his task force said needs to be done to keep water clean in Wisconsin.
That's exactly right. And that's exactly what we will be doing. We have been doing, we will be doing. The thing is this, is that, and you know this, Pat, and your listeners know this, all politics is local. And I'll tell you, when someone cannot go to their tap and get water that they feel safe to drink, that is very, very local. And they reach out to their local legislators. So, I mean, there are issues within their Republican caucus that they have to address. And that is why making a comment like dead on arrival, I mean, those are big, big, bold statements. And quite frankly, you know, we will see what happens here moving forward. Because what happened last night, Pat, was this, is the governor framed a debate. And he deframed the issues. He framed the issues about making sure that we provide resources back to our local units of government. He framed the debate when it comes to tax reform. I mean, we want to provide tax reform. This isn't going to be a giveaway through some type of flat tax that only goes to millionaires. And he also framed the debate when it comes to making sure that we keep our K through 12 public education strong in this state. I mean, that is an investment, the greatest investment we can have in our economy. He framed this debate last night. And for someone to come out and say that everything is dead on arrival, well, you and I both know, and so do your listeners, that that's not the case.
Well, equally,
debate has been framed.
Equally important toward framing, we focus so much on the Republican leader of the assembly, but the Republican leader of the state Senate, where you are, Devin Lemahieu, his quote was, in spite of his claim to remain prudent with our expenditures, the governor seems intent to spend people's money to massively expand government. The projected surplus is not a slush fund. We need to work together to return these funds to provide tax relief, which I called out last hour on two fronts. First off, fiscal prudence. When you again cite fiscal prudence, what I hear from that side of the aisle is, well, when budgets are tight, when times are tough, we can't spend too much money. But now, with a budget surplus, and when times are good, we can't spend too much money.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. But what the governor did last night was something that, you know, I really leaned back and thought, wow, he's going to send back 20%, 1 cent, 1 penny out of the 5 cent state sales tax. He's sending back to our local units of government to make sure that these local town governments and village governments have the resources that they need in order to make sure that our streets are safe with police protection, to make sure there's assistance when it comes to local road aids, to EMS assistance. That is very, very important. And these local units of government, these town governments, they've been asking for assistance. And to send back one-fifth of our state sales tax, that is a massive investment in our local governments as far as rural and urban. And what I mean by that is to make sure that we can continue to keep our communities, regardless of where someone lives, that we can, you know, have roads and bridges that are passable, that we can drive on, and that we can keep our community safe. The governor heard from the voters what they're looking for. And he responded last night, and he's really framing this debate.
And he did it in a way that, again, shows that effort toward bipartisanship that voters say they want, because this particular way of funding local governments is something that has been talked about on the Republican side of the
That's
aisle.
Right.
And last night, the Wisconsin Counties Association, the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, and the Wisconsin Towns Association all put out a statement that said, to see our state's top leaders work collaboratively to invest in our communities is unprecedented and will result in a stronger Wisconsin. They are encouraged that the governor is willing to look at what has been primarily a Republican idea and say, hey, let's work on this. My concern, of course, is that much like the Affordable Care Act started as a Republican think tank proposal, as soon as Democrats said, you know, why don't we go ahead and try that? And Republicans said, oh, no, now we hate the idea. I wonder how Republicans, if they're going to embrace this or if, because Evers is for it, now they're against it.
Right. Now they're going to move the goalpost. We will see. But I'll tell you, these local units of government, towns and counties, they'll speak up here because, again, we're talking about money back for shared revenue services, police protection, making sure our streets and our communities have what they need in order to people to stay safe. Pat, thank you for this.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. And I want to add one quick thing here. When I talked to somebody in your office yesterday and hearing you just now, I know this sounds like I'm romanticizing the past, but I can clearly hear the echo that is unique to state capitol offices. And it warms my heart from having, you know, my old office there. When I hear that echo, it's just like, it's a cool place to work because you get to work for the people. You get to kick around good ideas. And we're thrilled that you were willing to do that with us.
Senator Redpath. Thank you. Keep up good work.
You bet. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
When we come back, Jody Habish-Senekin, who is a candidate for state senate in the Milwaukee area, and former state treasurer Sarah Godlewski. And we will talk again about women and the need for more women in public service throughout Wisconsin at all levels of government.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
We are going to be talking about the need for change in the Wisconsin legislature, especially a seat that was held by a Republican for about 30 years here. And now there's going to be a special election in that 8th district. We'll talk to the candidate in a moment. But first, to help us set the table for it is our friend, former state treasurer, Sarah Godlewski. Sarah, good morning.
Well, good morning, Pat. And good morning to Jody, who is here to join us. You know, I will tell you one of the best parts of joining you, Pat, is trying to figure out who do we want to be the special guest? And I think there is no better person than Jody Habish-Senekin, who is running for this new open seat. It's the State Senate District 8, which is right outside of Milwaukee. And I just want to kind of note, Pat, that this is not a typical Senate seat election that we are seeing. I mean, yes, it's a special election, but why this is so important is that this is preventing the Republicans in our state Senate from having a supermajority, which I can't even believe I'm having this conversation because, you know, Tony Evers won by almost 52% of the vote. Yet today we only have 36% of the Senate. And so there is a lot at risk, but we just simply cannot afford to lose this seat. And that's why I'm so glad that Jody has stepped up and run, because she's a great candidate and will do a great job in Madison.
Seems like a good time to bring Jody into the conversation. Good morning. Thanks for being here today.
Good morning. And thank you very much for inviting me. And thank you, Sarah, for that introduction.
Well, we want to hit two things here. First, you know, your own background and biography, and also why you're running. And so you can start with either one, and then I'll steer you into the other if we don't get that full picture, Jody, of telling folks in the 8th District around Milwaukee and around the entire state all about yourself.
Sounds good. Thank you. I can first start with why I'm running. As Sarah pointed out, I felt that this election was just too important to not participate. I have been working for, gosh, my whole career, but particularly the last 20 years, I'm focusing my professional efforts on building coalitions across Wisconsin, diverse stakeholders. I worked with you, as you well know, on the Wisconsin puppy mills bill. And you can speak to that we had to bring together people across Wisconsin and address a long-term problem with a solution that would work across the aisle, across different interest groups. I did the same thing, leading a coalition for a strong Great Lakes Compact, and was involved on the legislative study committees and Governor Doyle's working group, et cetera, really trying to hash out how we could build this regulatory program that would work for industrial interests, municipal interests, environmental interests, governmental interests, and the like. And that was an agreement, as you well know, that was not just across the state, but across the region. It had to work in terms of long-term conservation of our Great Lakes, which is really our way of life in large part. So that skill set, and knowing that I have these relationships amassed over my lifetime professionally and otherwise, put me in a place that when I came to understand how critical this position is for Wisconsin's future, with Wisconsin quite on a tipping point for reproductive freedom and our democracy. I didn't feel comfortable sitting it out.
And your own story is one that includes being in and around that district pretty much all of your life, if I read correctly.
Yeah, that's true. I've spent 45 years of my life living in the district, born and raised in Fox Point, raised our four children in Senate District 8 communities of Bayside and River Hills. We live in Whitefish Bay. I've hit almost every community, it seems like, at least where we are able to. My husband and I own a business in Janesville, so it's a lot of driving. So it makes sense to where we are to be able to get there in a reasonable time period as well.
Well, you can certainly see then where you check a lot of the boxes in terms of the issues that you would bring to the legislature, not just from a small business standpoint, not just from a family standpoint, but also as somebody with that that long drive from an infrastructure standpoint. So in watching or hearing Governor Evers last night in the State of the State address, what things stuck out to you as things that are priorities for that Senate district and why voters should support you to take that seat?
One of the things that he spoke to was his interest in moving shared revenue, 20% of the state sales tax, which would provide $500 million a year to local communities. And I have been going around to our local law enforcement and village halls to get an understanding of what their needs are in terms of funding, resources, staffing. And I have been hearing again and again that they are limited. Their funding, their ability to meet the needs of their local communities, particularly law enforcement, has been diminished. And what Governor Evers is proposing in this regard is very important and will provide some stability and security to our local communities.
And Sarah, you were watching the State of the State as well, and related to that are some of those family issues, like childcare, for example.
Yeah, and I just wanted to just piggyback off of what Jody said, because I think one of the things is it couldn't be more of a contrast about what the Democrats want to do and what the Republicans want to do with taxes. So Tony Evers talking about supporting our local communities, giving them the resources they need to help with law enforcement, our public schools. And then right there in the Senate, Devin LeMahieu is talking about creating a flat tax, which who does that benefit? It benefits the top 1%. And so while Tony Evers has talked about giving a 15% tax cut for middle class and working families. And so I think you can't see more of a drastic kind of what the business they want to do in the Senate that Jody's going to step up and say, no way. And making sure that we actually give a tax cut to people who really deserve it and really need it, quite frankly.
I thought it was also very appropriate that the governor tied two issues together, bolstering the workforce and making childcare more accessible and affordable. It just seems that there's still too many politicians that can't seem to connect the dots that if you want one, you better take care of the other.
Well, I'm sure Jody and I, as moms on this call, and I know Pat too, you as a grandfather, and can talk about how important childcare is. And we know, like, if you look at the federal level, it's always the first thing to get cut. It's the first thing to go, even during a pandemic. And here's Governor Evers stepping up and saying, I want to give over $340 million to help families, whether it's through child tax credits, helping actually fund these child centers, because literally over 54% of the state is in a childcare desert right now.
Jody, what are your thoughts on how did you take what you heard about childcare and the efforts to bolster the labor force?
I think it makes a lot of sense, and it's really important. And as Sarah said, the fact that he's just speaking to it in terms of economic opportunities and family support resonated in both counts with me. I've always been a working mom. That always has been a challenge for myself and my family. And I know that this is a universal concern. From a workforce, it is an obvious connect. We saw it in COVID, we're seeing it still. There's not enough workers available in the workforce to fill the jobs. We're feeling it everyone in the state is feeling it. And if one significant obstacle is childcare, as it clearly is, we need to address that from a practical perspective in the way the governor is recommending.
We are joined by Jody Habersh-Sinikin, candidate for state senate in the 8th district around the Milwaukee area. Sarah Godlewski with us as well. Jody, one of the things that was very apparent in all the Republican reaction to the state of the state is something that I'm sure you're going to be asked about repeatedly, and that is crime and crime and crime and crime. Basically, to look at Republican Twitter last night, it was to say that everything on Wisconsin is on fire and everybody needs to be locked up. That's ridiculous. But in the Milwaukee area, it is a concern. So when people bring up what is it that a legislature can do to support law enforcement at the local level, what do you tell them about the role a legislature should have?
It's an excellent question, because that is exactly why I've been reaching out to police departments and other public officials in the area, is to understand how this shared revenue formula has been choking off local communities, including law enforcement's ability to protect us and keep our communities safe. It's actually coming from Madison's legislature, this restriction on the availability of funds and resources. And what I am coming to understand, that those who are most vulnerable to gun violence, to domestic abuse, to human trafficking, it's because of limited resources. And I understand why there is a concern for safe communities. I certainly share it. But the answer to it is not to further limit local communities' autonomy and ability to control their own destiny, including their law enforcement. We know where the needs are, and we have vulnerable people in our communities, and we need to keep us safe, and that's the way to do it.
And Sarah, you knew as state treasurer, watching state dollars as they flow, that if you're going to talk the talk about crime and law enforcement, again, it comes back to shared revenue. You'd better be willing to actually show some support and not just make speeches.
Well, I think the last time that shared revenue was actually increased or even addressed was in 1993, which is long overdue. And I did a roundtable when I was state treasurer with local county treasurers who help balance the books, and actually frontline workers, law enforcement, EMTs. And I'll never forget one individual in a small town in northeastern Wisconsin stepped up. He ran kind of the whole public safety for that community. And he said, "Sarah, I don't know how much longer we can continue. I mean, we're cutting people left and right. They're leaving our, you know, whether it's EMTs, for example, are leaving to go work at like the local Walmart or Quick Trip because they can make more money. I mean, this is a real problem. And so in order to address it, we need to give it the resources and the attention that it deserves."
Jody, you're in a special election in April. Also, that is the spring general election for nonpartisan offices. And there is an extremely important state Supreme Court election that day as well. Does having that state Supreme Court election that day, does that affect you in any way in terms of what you're telling people about the importance of voting and you know, really looking at who the candidates are and making sure you're registered and so forth?
Absolutely. The key to both the Senate District 8 seat that I'm running for and for our state Supreme Court election is high voter turnout. We need people to come out. We need a high Democratic turnout to influence this election, because they are both critical. My election, as you heard from Sarah correctly, is really going to determine whether or not Governor Evers can retain his veto authority, which is critical given the host of really harmful bills that crossed his desk last year that he had to veto, suppressing voter rights, further restricting women's rights. You know the list of them. We need that veto. We need the Supreme Court race, because that Supreme Court is going to be hearing the Governor Evers and Attorney General Josh Cowell's challenge to the 1849 abortion ban. We need a court who will listen to that. Wisconsin women's future quite literally hangs on that decision. And that same court will be hearing the gerrymandering attacks on our current maps and our voting. And as somebody in a district that is extraordinarily gerrymandered, I can't underscore underscore the importance again of having a Supreme Court who will apply democratic principles and legal principles to that decision making.
And finally, briefly, Sarah, while that's the April election, there is a primary February 21st. We can't really say enough about the importance of showing up because of the four candidates who are running for that state Supreme Court seat.
Yeah, I mean, we know that we have about 1.2 million Wisconsinites that typically come out for spring elections. That's a significantly lower number than who come out in November elections, but we have an opportunity to change that. And we know we only win by a few votes per ward. And so if there is an election that you need to vote at, this is the one. It really is. Are on the ballot. Gerrymandering's on the ballot. All of that is on the ballot. So we just can't afford to sit on the sidelines.
All right. Well, with that, Sarah, Jody, thank you so much. Good to see you. Thanks for the visit. We'll be back.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
If you are listening to us live on this Wednesday, January 25th at 7:50 in the morning, then the countdown clock says we have 25 hours, 9 minutes, and 30 seconds until the Civic Media $1 million giveaway in free radio advertising. The application process opens up at 9 a.m. tomorrow and closes when the $1 million worth of advertising is gone and spoken for. And so if you have a small business, if you're small business adjacent, go to civicmedia.us/million and learn all the details about that. That's going to happen tomorrow while Mr. Todd Alba is on the air. Exciting times for all of us at the Civic Media stations. Todd, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, Pat. How about yourself?
Good. I'm especially happy that this is $1 million that is just in advertising space coming from the company. It's not like, the NFL on Fox where they say, you could win $1 million of Terry Bradshaw's money. It's at no point have I seen a memo saying, here's your share of the million that's being deducted, on your pay scale.
Right. So, yes. I'm glad it's not coming from our salaries. Indeed. No, it's a great investment. You coming from Lake Wasota area, myself coming from Richland Center in Southwest Wisconsin, both from more rural, small communities. You understand, and in your old Senate district, having met with your constituents, you understand acutely how important our small businesses, our mom and pops are to the vitality, to the vibrancy of our communities, and how far, the minimum award on this, as you know, Pat, $5,000. That's the least amount people can be given, and that could go a long way and help a small business.
And the other way it can get stretched is because there is also the possibility that your small business could work with more than one station. Mm-hmm. And so just to pick, you could pick any two Civic Media stations, but let's pick Bow Falls Radio in Wausau. It could also, that business maybe thinks, I'd like to be on Wausau Radio, but we have a station in Wisconsin Rapids. And it could be that advertising on the Wisconsin Rapids station gets you a whole new fleet of customers who don't mind coming up the road, to Wausau to patronize your business. Or, like I said, other places around Wisconsin. This is extremely unique, and I'll be very excited to see how various businesses take advantage of it. It's probably the most excited I've gotten for radio commercials in a long time.
Right. And if we've got about 25 hours left, then we have about 25 hours left to create an LLC of some sort.
Oh, we haven't done that yet. That's right. Got to work on that. Well, we've been a little busy. There's a lot in the news. There's a lot in politics. I'm going to grouse about just one thing here because I didn't have time for it earlier in the show. But this is from our friends at the Wisconsin Examiner talking about how an alderman in Brookfield, one of the Milwaukee suburbs, is in hot water because of his comments about affordable housing. And, the things that he had to say about why we should not have, people with lower incomes coming into Brookfield. And he says, what's his name? Chris Seals. He says, what we're trying to do with this affordable housing is step down to a West Allis or a Wauwatosa. No, we're Brookfield. We won't step down to allow the people who can't afford to live in Brookfield to come in, because then we become West Allis and we become Wauwatosa. That is not Brookfield. I've been here 60 years. If you want to live here, put your nose to the grindstone and live in Wauwatosa or West Allis and save that money until you can afford to live in Brookfield. I don't you know, use this language lightly. What a jerk.
Well, it's worse than that. I mean, he's a complete moron. And I mean, isn't it astounding, Pat, that now, first we had Bob Spindell talking about being proud, use the word proud, that 37,000 fewer Black and Hispanics voted in Milwaukee. Now you got this guy. The dog whistles aren't even whistles anymore. They're just saying it outright.
They're foghorns.
They don't want Black people in their neighborhood. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. And it's sick and it's terrible. And I mean, it should be condemned.
Go be poor somewhere else.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, what are you going to pull up the drawbridge and put some extra sharks in the moat? Providing opportunity to others, it means, look, it's going to cut both ways because everything does. There's always going to be bad apples everywhere. But I wouldn't be where I am if my mom, a single mom raising four kids, one of whom died because he was sick all of his life. So there were, you know, if we hadn't had that help through Medicaid, if we hadn't had those food stamps, if I hadn't had those Pell Grants, I wouldn't have been able to go to college. But I did go to college. Mm-hmm. I did great. And I've paid so much more in taxes than any assistance that was given to me by living in Section 8 affordable housing in a really nice suburb. Mm-hmm. You know, and I caused a lot less trouble than somebody that did grow up in a wealthy household and, you know, still wanted to make some trouble. So to just paint everybody with a broad brush is, you know, in my mind, just disgusting. So I just wanted to call that out because I knew I'd get some agreement from you because, I mean, you don't have that in Richland Center. Anybody can come. We're a peaceful community, right?
Well, you know, for the what Richland Center's, I don't want to say stroll. I mean, a lot of small communities. Like we talked to the editor, April, of the Amory Free Press a couple weeks ago. They're struggling with just general housing, finding housing for people wanting to move there. Richland County struggling with housing as well. They now have, I believe, 60 Latino folks that are working at Cardinal Glass and Spring Green, but living in the old UW-Richland dorms for housing and then driving 30 miles one way a day to go to work because they're struggling with housing. But again, it's the integration of Richland Center, predominantly white place. More Latinos moving in have had migrant workers on dairy farms and orchards. So, you know, it's a continual mix and how we all get along.
It's very rare that you would have an instance of not welcoming somebody. I mean, here in the Chippewa Valley, if you're in Chippewa Falls or Eau Claire, you can come here from any place except Altoona. We don't want anybody from Altoona there. But apart from that,
what do you call people from Altoona? Altoona Knights? Altoonans? Altoonans? Maybe? I don't know.
You call them tuna, I guess. I guess I've never thought about that. Now I'm afraid to ask because I'm afraid this joke is going to blow up in my face. So quickly transitioning. What you been talking about on your show, or what's coming up ahead?
Coming up today, a little crossover with Pat Kreitlow to start things off, and then we have Trygve Olsen.
Oh, that guy.
From the Lincoln Project, as per usual, on our Wednesday. Going to talk about, of course, Trygve worked not only in Wisconsin, but also in Washington for a number of years. Talk a little bit about his insight on what's going on with all these classified documents. Now, Mike Pence also has documents, Joe Biden, Donald Trump. You know, is this a new thing, or is it that the guys before them just put them in the shredder when they found them? We'll ask Trygve that question. And also talk a little bit about the governor's state of the state as well.
Yeah, I mean, there was so much ground to cover in that with, again, somebody looking forward and, you know, making plans, being proactive. And then what appeared to be just the same old talking points that apparently any spending is bad. By, you know, fiscal prudence means don't spend too much money when times are bad, but it also means, you know, don't spend money when times are good. And it's not helpful. It's not proactive. And you, between working with Dale Schultz and others, remember when Republican legislators actually wanted to get things done. But I think we're seeing the same old obstruction as always out of this batch.
I never saw such partisanship. I mean, the Republicans wouldn't even stand up for the First Lady of Wisconsin. I've never seen that on either side of the aisle.
It is unfortunate indeed. Todd, thanks so much. I'll see you on your show in just a little bit. Hometown Health with Dr. Kristen Lierley tomorrow in this hour. Meanwhile, Earl Ingram's coming up next in Waukesha, Oshkosh, and Green Bay. Stephanie Miller in Madison. The aforementioned Mr. Alba in Richland Center. Wausau Amory all along the Civic Media Radio Network. That does it for us at Up North News Radio. Have a great Wednesday. We'll see you tomorrow.